greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the CIA and blowback when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. That's right, you get to keep 40% and the government gets 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 25%, and the government's going to net 75%. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you get to net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more. You produce 100% more, and you get to keep 8%. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS, by the way. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's a 4-hour CD set of entertaining information that answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and then receive so little. Let me teach you how to do that in my Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult home school. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. In this month's Acres USA is an interesting article which is entitled The Consequences of Empire. It's a story about the CIA. And the author, whose name is Chalmers Johnson, is a CIA spook, retired now. And the sub-headline says, How Blowback and Militarism Are Destroying Our Economy. It's the first CIA spook that I have read a story about that had something intelligent to say other than intelligence matters. Now, oftentimes you'll get some CIA guy and he'll tell you about the pitfalls of the agency and its CIA network around the world and how they gather intelligence and how they screwed up on Lebanon or how they screwed up on Iraq or something like that. But this guy's got something intelligent to say about the overall geopolitical circumstance that America finds itself in the year 2006. And it's published in the Acres USA. What is this? Is this a newspaper? No, it's The Voice of Echo Agriculture, Volume 36, Number 10. It's October 2006. It's this month's paper. It's actually in a magazine form now, kind of a newspaper magazine form. It used to be in a newspaper form for many, many years. And the main thrust of Acres USA, for those of you that may not know much about it, it's an ecological paper. It's an ecology. It's a green paper for farmers. People that subscribe to this generally are farmers. But, you know, people of all persuasions of politics and economies and Republicans and Democrats, you know, subscribe to it even in the cities because they want to know what in the hell's going on in our government as it relates to our food supply. So there'll be articles in here about GMOs and there's stories in here about farms and farmers and milk and all kinds of things that you people in the city need to know if you want to eat good food, or where can you buy good food, or where do you get a cow that's grass fed from a farmer in your neighborhood. You know, this is the kind of thing that you might be interested in. So the article this month, and this is in every month, they'll have an article like this or two, which doesn't have anything to do with agriculture at all. Nothing at all to do with agriculture. And then there's a book section in here. And they talk about good books that you ought to read if you want to know what's going on around you over here, you know. And this one really caught my eyeball, and I thought, well, gee, now who is this Chalmers Johnson? Well, he's a Navy veteran of the Korean War. He's a longtime Cold War warrior who now repents his former approval of the Vietnam War. He's an expert on Asia and a critic of the USS Ronald Reagan. That USS Ronald Reagan is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Sometimes it's anchored in San Diego Harbor, where a mistake holds the potential of reducing the country's eighth-largest city to atomic dust. Well, Johnson has served the CIA as a consultant, and as part of his varied academic career, he ran the Center for Chinese Studies at the University of California in Berkeley for many years. Looking back, he explains his take on the Vietnam War as a consequence of his orientation at the time. I knew too much about the international communist movement and not enough about what the United States government and its Department of Defense were doing. Johnson has traced each proximate cause several steps back and then distilled his findings into a book, which he calls Sorrows of Empire. And the book now is called Sorrows of Empire, the guy that wrote it, Chalmers Johnson. Militarism, Secrecy, and the End of the Republic is a second book. And today, Johnson is an inspiration to students who probe the politically incorrect subject of American empire. And then his new book, Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic, is now being ready for press and should be available sometime early in 2007. The article here is entitled The Consequences of Empire, but just to simplify it for my own bookkeeping over here, I'm just going to call it CIA Blowback. CIA Blowback. Kind of an odd word, this blowback word over here. It's a spook word. This is an interview with Acres USA, so the interview begins with Acres asking this question. Your most recent book has the subtitle Militarism, Secrecy, and the End of the Republic. Now, would you explain what you mean by that? Johnson's reply was, well, that's what the book is about. It's about the United States, and the United States has since 1940 down to the present without any break. We have either been engaged in war or totally prepared for war. And the costs of this state of affairs shows up over time. It has now led our country into total militarism, just like Japan. Japan in the 1930s was a militaristic state, an empire. And that is, the military is a way of life now in America, and as a way of making a living, it's a way of making profit. It doesn't mean national security or national defense. It means a way of life. And the Department of Defense has very little to do with the defense of the United States. It has much more to do with buying weapons that nobody uses. They're not even particularly good at buying weapons that nobody uses either. Over time, this militarism has had very negative consequences. And according to one count done by the Federation of American Scientists, we have now used military force in other people's countries 201 times since the beginning of World War II. And in most cases, we were the instigator of that war or military action and the use of force. Now, I'm going to put a bracket around that, and I'm going to read that to you one more time. 201 times. Now, if you count back to 1940, see, I was born just a little bit prior to that, 1939, and you count forward, that takes us up here to 2006. You know, we're pushing 68 years here. 68 years. In the past 68 years, or 67 years, or 66 years, if you count from 1940, the United States of America has been engaged in 201 military conflicts or interventions. 201. Let's see, how many is that a year? If we had 201 and we divided that by 66, we'd have 3.04. So, for the past nearly 70 years, we've been involved in three wars or three military interventions caused by us. Over the past 70 years. Now let's go to China and ask the same question. Can you remember any Chinese interventions? You know, like the Chinese intervened in Korea in 1950. And the Chinese intervened in Vietnam to a limited extent in the Vietnam War. Now, that's two that I can remember from China. Now, the Russians have a little bit bigger intervention record. You know, they intervened after World War II in several countries. Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Poland, Latvia, Estonia, Finland. I mean, you know, you could probably count on both hands the number of times that Russia has intervened in some war, created a war, or military intervention in some country, typically one of their neighbors. And the United States, we're the champions. 200. According to one count done by the Federation of American Scientists, we've used military force in other people's countries 201 times since the beginning of World War II. And in most cases, we were the instigator of the use of that force. And we've never once implemented or succeeded in creating one single democratic institution with this approach, despite all of the talk of our current president, who surely has not distinguished himself for any real knowledge of history, particularly the history of his own country. My God, I got to read that one to you again so that we don't miss the importance of that. Now remember, the purpose for this Iraq and Afghanistan escapade is that we want to instill democratic systems or democratic governments in those countries. Remember, we went there to fight terrorism, then we went there to destroy weapons of mass destruction, and then we upgraded that to a regime change, and then we upgraded that to the installing of democracy. So if you don't know why we're in Iraq, there's four good reasons right there, and we got them right from our own president, didn't we? But here's the outcome of that. Now, we've been doing this 201 times since 1940, and so far, we have never once, not a single time, there isn't a single democracy in the world that has been implemented or succeeded in creating democratic institutions with this approach, despite the talk of our current president, who surely has not distinguished himself for the knowledge of history, particularly the history of his own country. I know somebody's going to write me a letter now, and they're going to say, well, that can't be true because, you know, we've got a democracy in Vietnam, or we got a democracy in South Korea, or we got a democracy in Japan. Well, yeah, I guess you could say we got a democracy in Japan and South Korea. So maybe it ain't 201 times. Maybe that's not the way they're counting. Maybe they got something else in mind over here. I'm just suggesting off the top of my head, there's two countries that when we got through with the Japs, We took their militaristic society, we converted them over to what we call democracy today, and they got some kind of a parliamentary democracy over there, where we have intervened. You know, we threw the Germans out of Western Europe, you know, and we had the German regime there in 1945 or 44, you know, in Western Europe, and all those countries over there, to the best of my knowledge, are democracies. I'm not quite sure what they mean by that statement over there, but do you think we're going to get a democracy in Iraq? Do you think we're going to get a democracy in Afghanistan? You know, those people have never had democracy over there over the past several hundred years, and so I'm going to be kind of surprised. We have had military interventions all over the world, and many times those countries were what we kind of called, you know, in some form or another, democracy, but I'll leave that one up to you to decide. He goes on, he asks a second question here, Acres, USA. It says, yet the majority of Americans would go along with such a program. Now, how has this come to be? That's kind of a question. The majority of Americans today wouldn't go along with such a program as intervening in 201 countries. And by the way, I just saw a number the other day. We have military occupation, or we have military bases, and it was 137 countries in the world today. My God, kids, there's only 191 in the United Nations. There's 191 countries, I saw the other day, in the United Nations. And if I remember my numbers now correctly, we've got military personnel or military bases in 137 of those countries. I don't think the Roman Empire ever had anything like that. You know, I'm not an expert on the Roman Empire, but, you know, when I was a kid in school, you know, we read a little about it, and they controlled just about everything around the Mediterranean Sea in their day. And they had military forces up in Great Britain, Ireland, Scotland, France, you know, all over the known world, you know, out to the Middle East, and then of course there was the Chinese and the Indians and other people living in the world. I don't think they were dominating the Chinese or the Indians, but they were pretty dominant around the Mediterranean. And if you take a look at the size of the world, you know, they weren't influencing people, at least to the best of my knowledge, in the Mayan countries or the Aztecs or the Incas or the Arapahos and the Cheyennes here in the New World. But America does. Now that's, you talk about world empire now. I don't think the British Empire ever had an influence in the world like we Americans have. And we always tell people, well, we're not empire builders. Okay, well, what do you call that? Well, Johnson answered that question. You know, how has this come to be? How Americans aren't in favor of empire. Americans aren't in favor of running around the world and setting up bases in 137 countries. How'd that come to be? So he says, well, among the ways that this is put over on the American people is called secrecy. And that is the so-called imperial presidency. The fact that everything our most powerful institutions do from the budget on down is secret from the public. For instance, 40% of the defense budget is black, and that is, it is secret. It is even secret from virtually all members of Congress, meaning that the money can be allocated by military officers in the Pentagon without any form of oversight. And this is what we mean by the imperial presidency. The separation of powers, the balance of powers that we built so carefully into the structure of the American Republic, has been knocked out of balance. Today, the Congress is almost totally worthless, even though the founders of our country regarded Congress as the key institution. And today, the combination of militarism and the secrecy, which eliminates the possibility of any effective oversight, adds up, in my view, to a real danger to the Republic, meaning the structure of government that we implemented in the Constitution of 1787. And Acres asks this question. Well, in the last part of the 1950s, just before President Eisenhower left office, Eisenhower injected about $55 billion into the economy that he had no right to inject based on profits and savings. Was that the beginning, in your opinion, or do you have any other milestone that you'd like to single out as the beginning of this period of time in our history? And then Johnson said, no, I think it goes back to 1950. I think it goes back to the NSC 68 document, and that's the National Security Council document number 68. That's where I think it starts. Now, the NSC 68 document, which has finally been released to the public, it was a grand strategy for the United States to follow in the Cold War. Paul Knights was the primary author and has now indicated that one of the considerations in launching the Cold War was what we call military kinesiasm. That is, many people in the 1950s believed that the Great Depression was likely to recur in the United States, and that the United States had overcome the collapse and demand associated with the Great Depression only because of the arms spending during World War II. And these people thus believed that economic security could be assured with renewed arms spending. We have now spent ourselves virtually into bankruptcy. And to take just one statistic, between the Manhattan Project and today, that is 1942 with the beginning of the Manhattan Project, and 2006, today, we have now spent more than $5 trillion on nuclear weapons. $5 trillion on nuclear weapons. These are perfect examples of Keynesian make work. They've never once been used, and even though we threaten to use them all the time, I certainly applaud the courage of President Eisenhower in his farewell address in defining the phrase military-industrial complex, and then warning us about it. Nevertheless, Eisenhower built the military-industrial complex, and he's the one who got it launched. It was Eisenhower that created and built and launched the military-industrial complex. And it was only as he was leaving office that he took the trouble to tell us that that was a mistake. So I'm therefore not quite the enthusiast for Eisenhower that some younger contemporary writers are. Now I know I'm going to get a letter here that's going to say, wait a minute, never used nuclear weapons once. Well, we used them on Japan twice. And I'm not quite sure what he had in mind when he made that statement, but he said they're perfect examples of Keynesian make work. They've never been used or once been used. They have been used twice. Right there. Alright, so don't send me a letter about that one. I'll just correct that boy's gaffe right there. Akers asks this question. That emphasis on military spending is in effect what started us on the Roman road to ruin. Is that the point that you're making? America is a new Rome, a world ruling empire. Johnson says, I believe so. One of the things that I would want to stress today is the degree to which we have become dependent on military spending. One of the most interesting phenomena in our lives started in the 1990s and into the first decade of the 21st century, and that is the public reaction to military base closings by the Pentagon. Military base closings. It is perfectly logical for the Pentagon to shut down military bases. We have literally hundreds of military bases all over America that are no longer needed. But as soon as this happens, you get an uproar from local politicians. Oh my God, save our bases. There are jobs there. And the military-industrial complex is very much aware of this. In a really big project like the B-2 bomber, for instance, the Congress will put a piece of that B-2 bomber program in as many congressional districts as they possibly can. Certainly, they will put something in every state in the Union. Then, If a member of Congress gets the idea that we don't need yet another weapon of mass destruction, the Pentagon can close down the plant in his district or potentially put him out of business in the next election. At any rate, they can certainly punish that congressman or that senator. And one good example of this attitude is from the state of Washington, which has two very pleasant women senators. Both of these female senators are well-educated, liberal people who work hard. And all you have to do is to say Boeing to them, and they turn into fascist hyenas before your very eyes. And they would do anything in their power to keep Boeing healthy, working, and making weapons of mass destruction. Akers asks this question. But this whole structure is based on one thing, isn't it? The constant debt expansion, that is the doubling and the redoubling of the public and private debt. And Johnson responds, well, that's precisely why in my next book, Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic, one of the main things is that we are flirting with bankruptcy. We're flirting with bankruptcy. Just like numerous empires in the past with imperial overextension and unused military apparatus that is well beyond any rational need to defend the country. We do not manufacture that much in this country anymore, and we've hollowed out our domestic manufacturing except for one area. We are easily, by orders of magnitude, the largest single weapons manufacturer on earth today. And we sell these weapons to practically anybody who wants to buy them. Now, this is not private enterprise. This is government enterprise, the government military industrial complex. And it's done through foreign military sales inside the Pentagon. Now, we like to pretend that the arms industry in this country is capitalism, but that's not true. It has only one customer, and that is the United States government. And the industry is extremely concentrated. The United States government encourages mergers of these military suppliers so that we get companies like Lockheed Martin, or McDonnell Douglas, or Northrop Grumman. Old manufacturers that have been forcibly merged, actually with great financial incentives, and these incentives have been given out by the Pentagon. It really adds up to a form of state socialism in which the people making the decisions are in a continuous process of circulation from the Pentagon to the boards of directors of these big military industrial contractors. It's a revolving door. I think that's what we're talking about here as a threat to the Republic. It is interesting to me how much discussion there is in the press, today, in the press, of these issues. Part of it is prompted by the revolt of the retired generals against Secretary Rumsfeld, but also by an increasing awareness that the president virtually proclaimed that he is today an elected king and that he can do anything that he wants to by these signing statements. You see, when the president signs legislation, he then appends statements to that legislation that he does not regard this law as applying to him. But these so-called signing statements are not mentioned anywhere in our Constitution. They're not a part of our constitutional law. And meanwhile, the judiciary is increasingly marginalized and for reasons that no one fully understands. The Congress has become simply irrelevant, unable to function in any way like it was intended to by our founding fathers. All right, we'll be back here. We're talking about the CIA and blowback. We'll see that blowback word used here a couple of times. But I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give out, don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And these viewpoints expressed by these people is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing an article here in Acres, USA. Let me give Acres a plug. They're pretty good guys down there in Austin, Texas. They used to be over in Metairie, Louisiana. Then they moved over to Austin, Texas, and they've changed the format. Charles Walders, lives up in Independence, Missouri, as the founder. His boy is now running the Acres USA. Used to be like a newspaper, but today it's more like a news magazine, I would say, that deals with agriculture. Let's see where you can get a copy of this. Well, you could go to Post Office Box 91299, Austin, Texas, 78709-1299. Yep, that's your mail, snail mail. They're at 5321 Industrial Oaks Boulevard, Suite 128 in Austin, Texas, 78735. That's their freight address. Here we go. They got a phone number down there. It's area code 512-892-4400. That's telephone 512-892-4400. And they've got an email address, too. They got more than one. They got a website, www.acresusa.com. That's an easy one. Go to their website, www.acresusa.com. And request for permission to reprint must be in writing. I didn't write them and I didn't tell them I was going to do this. They never got mad at me in the past, so. We'll just fly by the seat of our pants here on this review. And Charles Walters is the executive editor. He lives up in Independence, Missouri. Fred Walters is the managing editor and publisher. That's his boy. And I think I would call them. I don't see a price in here, but I think it's about $30 a year. I subscribe because I'm a farmer and because I'm interested in farming and especially things like GMOs and what's the latest news going on in agriculture and make sense for farmers, make sense for people that want to eat clean food too. So I recommend Acres USA, but almost every issue they'll have some geopolitical topic in here. You know, they're not zeroed in just 100% on agriculture, although that's the main thrust of the paper or the news magazine. Let me give you their number again, their telephone number here. Austin, Texas is where they're located. For you people down there in Austin, Texas, that's a local operation for you guys. And I see that here on page 4. Telephone number again, 512-892-4400. Once more, that's 512-892-4400. You can tell them George Gordon sent you. I don't think that Charlie's mad at me. Sometimes I give recommendations like this, and the people that we recommend or we review their books, sometimes we get nasty letters back here that says, you know, we don't want to be associated with right-wing radical kooks like you. So sometimes we get negative feedback here, but I don't think you'll get that from Acres. At least we haven't so far. Last time I talked to Charlie, he was still pretty friendly with me. All right, we're talking about Acres USA and an article in here, and the article deals with the CIA. The guy that wrote it, his name is Johnson. He was a former CIA spook. He's now retired. He's a college professor, or was, at least at one time, at the University of California in Berkeley. Now, that doesn't say very much for a professor from Berkeley. I'll concede that. But this guy sounds like he's repentant. You know, he saw the error of his ways, and he gave this interview to Acres USA. Now, Acres is a pretty conservative bunch. They're not kind of wild like I am, but they're not left-wing radicals either. Now, Acres asks this question: well, where's the court in all of this? Where's the Supreme Court of the United States in this fascist military-industrial complex? And Johnson says, well, it's nature. The nature of the Supreme Court is to preserve itself. So they only deal with constitutional cases, and it's well understood that it must operate within political limits. And the court is not the organization that is going to check the imperial presidency. If anybody is going to check the imperial presidency, it would have to be the Congress. So Acres asks the next question. We act like an imperial power, but we don't actually have colonies in the traditional sense. We don't have colonies in the traditional sense. Johnson responds, well, that's part of the argument of my work, that it's still an empire, whether you have colonies or not. It's still forcible hegemony of one country over another. The unit is no longer the colony. Now it's the military base. Now, according to the Pentagon's own count, we currently have 737 military bases, American military bases, 737 of them, located in other countries around the world. Now, this situation has no rational relationship to national security here in the United States at all. It affords a way of life for a lot of people and a way of making a living for a lot of people, but there's no question that all of this adds up to imperialism. And it recalls the end of the old Roman Republic, which also dominated the Mediterranean world through a series of military bases. And in fact, in the Persian Gulf, it had roughly the same number of military bases that the United States has in the Gulf today. Acres. But the military has been used as an engine of credit the way we look at it. Johnson. Well, I think that's very true. It is a peculiar institution that we have in America. You know, we used to always think of our military as a citizen army, but it hasn't been a citizen army since 1973. There is no obligation of citizenship to serve in the armed forces, or even to defend the country, like there was when I was in the Navy in the Korean War. We don't have a draft. And we no longer have states with militias. It's a professional military today, a professional army. It's a way of life. It has increasingly been a route of social mobility for people facing dead ends. And although these numbers have declined as a result of the Iraq War, people would like to improve themselves, but not necessarily at the expense of being killed for dubious reasons in a far-flung country like Iraq. Akers asks this question, well, what is this doing to our social structure and to our freedoms then? Johnson responds, well, that's certainly one of the issues that has motivated me to get involved in this question. I have now written three books of an inadvertent trilogy on the dangers of American militarism. I was a Cold War warrior, and I certainly thought the Soviet Union was a menace to my country. I believe that there was a logic to our activities during the Cold War. You see, when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, when the Soviet Union imploded, Russia today is a much smaller place than the old Soviet Union used to be. Now, when that occurred in 1991, I expected that there would be a genuine peace dividend, that we would begin to draw back from this huge global military apparatus that we had strung out all over the world, an apparatus that we had of intruding into everybody else's business. You know, once the Soviet Union disappeared, so did the entire rationale for the Cold War operation. The thing that startled me, however, the thing that made me wake up as a professor of international relations, was how we instantaneously, I mean immediately, in an almost unthinking manner, sent out a search to find a replacement enemy. Once the Soviet Union had ceased to be our enemy, we now needed a new enemy. So was that new enemy going to be China? Or was it going to be drugs? Or was it going to be terrorism? Or instability? Or something? But what was not contemplating, or what no one ever thought of, or nobody ever advanced, was reducing the size of the world's largest military establishment. In America, we spend 50% of all of the rest of the world's spending on the military. Think of that. If you take all of the military spending in the world by 191 countries, half of all of that military spending is done by one country, the United States of America. Now that led me to question why. Why does one country spend half of all of the military expenditures in the world? What happened? Was the Cold War in fact a cover for a more deep and fundamental commitment to empire? Probably going back to the end of World War II? Well, it does seem that something like that was at work, and this leads us into the comparative study of empires, which collapse with regularity. You know, it took 300 years for the Roman Empire to collapse. As the Roman Empire's leaders put it to the world of enemies, but the collapse of empire is coming with the speed of FedEx these days. Just in my lifetime, I have seen the collapse of the Nazi German Empire, the Imperial Japanese Empire, the British Empire, the French Empire, the Dutch Empire, the Portuguese Empire, and now the Soviet Empire. If you and I were talking back in 1985, and I said to you that 4 years from now the Soviet Union will disappear, you would have said,
You are insane. This is not really a reliable guy. He's daydreaming. But, boys and girls, the Soviet Empire is gone. Now, Akers asked the question, and it happened very rapidly, didn't it? It happened very rapidly. How long, boys and girls, do you think it will take for the American Empire to disappear? Well, Johnson answers it this way. He said, it happened very rapidly and for roughly the same kinds of reasons that are causing our decline here in the United States today. We call it imperial overreach. It's an inability to reform in economic institutions, a growing rigidity in and overly great influence on ideology. And what I'm arguing here is that both protagonists in the Cold War overextended themselves. And here in America, we're the last man standing. We're the last to go because we were always richer than the Soviet Union was. But that wealth is a trap. And it's a trap that we've gotten ourselves into, and I'm afraid that it may, in fact, be too late to reform it. Akers asked this question. Well, when they built the Suez Canal in Egypt back in the 1860s, Egypt ended up financing a good chunk of that canal, and it wasn't able to do that. So they borrowed the money from England. And then when Egypt couldn't repay the debt, England ended up taking over the country of Egypt. Is that the kind of thing that's going to happen to us when finally nobody will accept our paper and we can't pay them back? Is that where we're headed? Johnson responds, well, today we have the world's largest trade deficit. It's the largest single trade deficit ever recorded. And we have monumental fiscal deficits in the government. We are a nation that more or less does not save anything. Our savings rate is now negative. And we have allowed our manufacturing companies, our capabilities, to decline radically. And the danger is that our future will be that of Argentina. Argentina was once the richest country in Latin America. In 1936, Argentina was the fifth largest economy in the world. And now, as a result of incompetent economic management, Argentina is bankrupt. Akers, if we go into receivership as a nation, who's going to be the receiver? Is it going to be the military, or is it going to be somebody else? Johnson's response, well, these are the complex issues that require speculation. I don't see the political system actually reversing the situation that we face today. It's the political parties and the political institution that are the cause of our malaise, and largely because of the inability of Congress to perform in any meaningful way. Now, for instance, I live in the 50th Judicial District, or the 50th District of California, where we have just experienced the resignation of our member of Congressman, Republican Randy Duke Cunningham, for the greatest bribery case in the history of the United States, or at least in the history of the House of Representatives. Now, of course, the bribes came from the military-industrial complex. And Cunningham was a member of both the Appropriations Committee and the Subcommittee of Defense Appropriations and the Intelligence Committee. And he was being paid off in lavish gifts. He was being paid houses and things like that. He was being paid by defense contractors. Now, you know, if you saw somebody sliding into home base, and then, as he was sliding into home base, he pulls out a $1,000 bill and offers it to the umpire. You'd call that a bribe. Well, that's done every day. It's done all the time in the U.S. Congress. But we don't call it bribes or bribery. We call it campaign contribution. And it's technically legal. Except that Cunningham just went too far. And he accepted things like a Rolls-Royce car and furniture and other things. Now the point is this, that when we've reached that kind of condition, that's the condition that we find America in today. That's why I don't believe that the political system is capable of reversing itself at this point in time. And the public could very well pull them in, but I still don't see the general mobilization of the public simply because of the tremendous difficulty in getting information with the main media, CBS, NBC, Time, Fox News, for instance. All of the main media is controlled by corporate conglomerates. And they have interlocking boards of directors. The members of the boards of directors on these media conglomerates also sit on the boards of directors of Boeing and Lockheed Martin and other defense contractors. So my anticipated conclusion of all of this is probably bankruptcy. And then when the rest of the world gets tired of financing our wars and our extravagant way of life, and they get tired of maintaining our level of living, they will cut off our money. Acres asks this question. Well, have you given any thought to whether the institutional arrangements, political or otherwise, could withstand that type of collapse? And Johnson responds, well, they would certainly be put under enormous pressure, and unless it was explained very carefully, the collapse would have a tendency to discredit them. I don't think that the republic, the form of government that our founding fathers created, is in disrepute. It has simply been undercut. It's been hijacked. It depended on, above all, a balance of power within the government. It depended upon a prevention of the concentration of power in any one single institution, whether it be the presidency or the Congress or, for that matter, the court. They were to be divided. One was a check on the other. What we would have to do is to reconstitute that separation of powers, but it would virtually take a revolution at this juncture of time to reconstitute this separation of powers at this time in our history. I cannot imagine many presidents of either party who would actually bring the military-industrial complex or the secret intelligence agencies or the black box of Congress spending under any Democratic control. I think it's simply too late for that at this period of history. They're too institutionalized. And the system has come to depend upon them and to depend upon the institution. The entire economy depends upon, and the business and the government, all of us, depend upon the military-industrial complex for the food on our table. And they're totally secret. Even if you're an honest congressman, and that's fairly rare. But even if you were an honest congressman and you really wanted to maintain oversight on the black budget within the Defense Department, you simply can't do it because you simply cannot get the information that you need in order to rein in the black box spending. I think I'll put a line right there. We'll take this up here next time. But let me give you a name and address. I think that this article is pretty important. I think you ought to read it yourself. Take a look at it. See what you think. I think it was a dynamite article here, even if the professor here is kind of a radical. Or a radical right-winger from a liberal institution called the University of California. This is called Acres USA. It's the voice of Echo Agriculture. And they're located in Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas. And the telephone number down there is 512-892-4400. That's 512-892-4400. They've also got a webpage. It's www.acresusa.com. It's all one word, A-C-R-E-S-U-S-A, Acres USA, all one word, lowercase, www.acresusa.com. Why don't you go to their webpage? Take a look, see what you think. They'll probably have a subscription number there. I was looking for it here. It used to be about $30 a year. Oh, here it is. They got it in here. It's U.S., $27 a year. 12 issues. It's a monthly. International, $32 a year. Single copies, $5, which includes shipping and handling. So if you just wanted a copy of the October 2006 Acres USA, send a $5 bill in an envelope and send it to P.O. Box 91-299, Austin, Texas, 78709-1299. That's snail mail. P.O. Box 91-299, Austin, Texas, 78709. That's the zip code, 78709-1299. Now, this is called Acres USA. And the editor of it, the guy that founded the paper, his name is Charles Walters, and he puts an editorial in here every month. Usually he talks about agriculture and price supports and the farms and the Department of Agriculture and things like that. He writes, this month, parting shots from the editor, he's written a short editorial here on the kindness of strangers. I'll cover that kindness of strangers here in this series of programs. I subscribe here to Acres because it's not only a farm or a farmer's magazine. It also contains, nearly every month, they'll have a geopolitical discussion in here as it relates to agriculture and how it impacts upon agriculture. This article here, how is this going to impact upon farmers? How is it going to impact upon you? Now remember, this guy says, I have lived through the demise of the German Empire, the Japanese Empire, the Soviet Empire, Portuguese, Dutch, French. And he made this observation. He said, hey, if I'd have said in 1985 that the Soviet Empire is going to collapse in 4 years, you'd have thought this guy was a madman. I think if somebody said the American Empire is going to collapse in the next 4 years, you'd say, hey, that Gordon, you know, he must be on some pretty strong stuff. And yet, boys and girls, the Roman Empire, the Babylonian Empire, the Egyptian Empire, all the empires of the past are gone. History, toast, out of business. Now, you take a look at where we're at today and what we're doing today. We're following the same path of destruction that the Russians, Japanese, Germans, Egyptians, Assyrians, Babylonians, Romans, Greeks, and everybody else in history has ever followed. It's the overextension of empire. Overextension of your empire. And then an inability to get it back under control. This writer thinks that it's already too late and that it's probably not going to happen in this country. Remember, this is Acres USA, the October 2006 edition. I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a closer here and we'll take this up next time. I want you to remember that the Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. .org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.